Yeah, I'm going to apologize for this one. This is my bad. This is all on me. I took us here.
You did.
I felt like I was giving us a nice day out at the seaside. Mm-hmm. And what I feel like I've actually done is just gone, hey, follow me. You've gone, yeah, all right then. And then I've walked you down the street and I've just pointed at a homeless man's public bathroom. I'm like, look at that.
What you've actually done is there's a Scorsese movie called King of New York, starring Robert De Niro. Mm-hmm. And he's a very shy, awkward man who doesn't really know about the world. And he meets a young lady and he's very fond of her. And he's like, hey, we should go to the pictures.
Right.
And then she gets all dressed up and he takes her to a porn theater because that's the cinema he goes to.
Yeah.
And he suddenly realizes that what he has thought was fine is in fact shameful.
Yeah, that's what I've done.
That's what you've done.
Yeah, that's it. That's this episode.
Yeah. Shall we start it?
I'm Ben Groves.
I'm Rob McFarlane.
And welcome to the Every Movie Ever Podcast! That's right, we're talking Fred Durst's The Fanatic from 2019. And fuck me, buddy! I've been desperate to do this one for a long time.
Why?
Is it an insane mess or is it just everyone kissing his starfish? His chocolate starfish. You get it? Those are
some of his lyrics.
Those are some of his lyrics.
Right.
That's going to be happening a lot.
Okay.
Now, before John Otto takes us to the Matthews Bridge and we keep rolling with this absolute masterpiece that is The Fanatic. How you doing, buddy?
I'm well, bud. I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to be chatting with you. This is my favourite place. This is my favourite time, so.
Nice.
How are you?
I'm all right. I'm a little sleepy.
Yeah, none fucking taken.
What do you mean? I'm all right. I'm a very sleepy boy. Okay. I haven't been sleeping much recently.
Oh, babe.
I know.
What's up?
Just got the op coming up, man. Some shit in it.
Oh, you worried?
Not worried. It's more like I wake up at 2:30 most mornings in a weird panic attack and just start Googling.
Right.
Robot VAT assisted blectomies.
Do you know what I think this is? I think it's the rotten bit of your lung having its last joyride. I'm not going to be around much longer.
Yeah, yeah.
So I've got a bucket list. Right, 2 a.m. panic attack. I love those.
You think that the bit of the lung that I'm getting removed is like the Green Goblin?
Yes. Yeah, right, okay. Exactly.
In that scenario, I'm Willem Dafoe.
Yes.
And my bit of lung is the Green Goblin.
Yes.
Makes it better. Not going to lie. That makes it easier.
Good.
Nice. Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man saves the day yet again. What a fucking hero.
Right. Should we sum up the show a little bit?
Yes, buddy. We are talking. Why? Why was this film made?
What was Devon Sauer and John Travolta thinking?
Is this based on a true story?
Is this good, bad?
Yes.
Good, bad?
Yes.
At least successful even for B-movie standards?
Why this movie is fucking amazing.
And most importantly, I'm desperate for you to try and pull out of your ass what this film really means.
I've got this and it's a deeply personal meaning.
It's a
deep, very, very close to the bone.
Uh-huh.
As soon as we get to it, you'll understand it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
I've never felt more seen is the
right.
takeaway
no,
from this
okay.
film.
No, okay, I've got that. I can see that. I can see that. Now, before any of us have an emotional breakdown about how insane this film is.
I'm going to get too excited. I'm going to put that one out there.
Right.
I don't think it's an emotional breakdown.
You've written a plot breakdown for the many people that are planning to never see this film. And I'd argue never should.
It's free on Prime.
It's free on Prime.
What else are you going to do for 88 minutes?
If you have literally nothing else to do with 88 minutes, watch this film.
Yeah.
But there are other options available. You can take off your thumbnails with pliers.
But that's not as fun.
You can try and get a paper cut on your banjo string.
Get a couple of your buddies together. Mm. Slap on The Fanatic.
Yep.
And just strap yourselves in for a wild ride.
Chew tinfoil.
Wild ride. Sum up this. Come on, get it going. You go,
act
you go
one.
Act one.
Hey, can you sign this?
Mm.
We meet Moose, John Travolta, rocking a champion mullet.
Champion mullet.
A socially awkward man-child whose whole personality is movie memorabilia hoarder.
Sound familiar?
I have a point on this. He worships action star Hunter Dunbar like he's the last VHS tape at the local Blockbuster.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. This movie pretends this is quirky and not terrifying, while Devon Sauer tries to convince us he's still famous enough to have stalkers.
That felt mean.
Moose escalates from autograph pests to breaking and entering enthusiast faster than you can say, why the fuck are you using my toothbrush?
Yeah.
He hovers around Dunbar's house like a lost Roomba, ignoring every social cue in existence. Dunbar, meanwhile, treats Moose with the kind of open hostility usually reserved for Jehovah's Witnesses, which only makes Moose double down. The film wants tension, but mostly delivers the sneaking suspicion that Travolta lost a bet.
Act 2. You're blocked on my social media. Moose blocks Leah on his social media. Oh, Leah is his BBF. Who enables his stalker behavior for some reason.
What's a BBF? Is it like a BBW?
It's like BFF, but they don't say BFF. I've Googled it and it says best brother forever.
Right, okay.
Anyway.
Do we think Fred maybe misremembered?
And I just don't think anyone clued into this. They, they just went with it. So Leah is his BBF who enables his stalker behavior and for some reason narrates the whole film.
Yeah,
but... That's the entire bit of Act 2. Let's just move on. Let's just keep it going.
But also, everything she narrates... doesn't drive the plot forward and has no plot relevant details. It's just shit poetry.
It's almost like what you're doing to this breakdown. Not driving it forward at all. Let's get into Act 3.
Act 3, things implode when Moose finally goes full Fatal Attraction without the charisma, leading to duct tape screaming and Travolta dressed as Jason Voorhees like he's auditioning for a pound shop straight to DVD slasher flick. Commas are good. Moose gets his hand shot off, stabbed in the eyeball and still doesn't get the fucking autograph. Instead of a climactic showdown, the movie sort of trips over itself, landing somewhere between tragic, ridiculous, and why did Fred Durst make this? Roll credits.
Okay. So I know that sounds stupid.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And I've had to sum it up real quick because the first act is a full hour.
Yeah.
The second act is seven minutes.
Memorabilia hunter meets his favourite guy, gets brushed off, and things escalate to murder.
Just wants an autograph.
Yeah.
That's the entire film. Just wants an autograph. So, I've wanted to watch this for the longest time. Like, the longest time. And I have never been happier and more confused in my entire life.
What?
Take me through your initial watch through. Give me the ups and downs. Where were we at? What were we thinking?
So, for those that don't know about Limp Bizkit,
Limp
Bizkit were an early 2000s new metal band. New metal kind of was like simpler riffs. With a little bit of a hip-hop flavour. And there were a few bands that were big, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Slipknot came out of that, even though they're not new metal. Deftones came out of that, even though they're not new metal.
You're looking at, like, Linkin Park, Papa Roach, that kind of shit.
Linkin Park, they very much were.
Mm.
Limp Bizkit very much were. And Korn very much were. Those were the big three, And Limp Bizkit, I have always despised because it is willfully stupid.
It is. It is.
As I've grown... and gotten a little bit less up my own fucking ass, I kind of see the appeal of the willful stupidness now.
Right.
As somebody who now enjoys the remake of The Toxic Avenger, because it's done lovingly, I just have never got to a point where I trust Fred Durst to be doing it knowingly. I think he's being authentically stupid.
Yeah.
And I can't celebrate that.
Okay, I'm in the opposite boat to that.
Right.
Because I think that that's a great thing. I think someone that is this committed to just being themselves and being themselves makes people who are driving down a country lane go, you know what? Yeah, a Nine Inch Nail will get knocked the fuck out.
There was that as well, because I was a big Nine Inch Nails fan and they had a big beef.
Yeah, yeah.
I do think, though, that Fred Durst, the lead singer of Limp Bizkit, is an undiagnosed X-Man. And I think he's got the exact same powers as Domino from the Deadpool movies, for those of you that have not read the comics.
Oh, yeah, he's just really lucky.
He's just really lucky.
Yeah.
Because Wes Borland, the guitarist of Limp Bizkit, is a generational talent.
Yeah.
He is insanely good.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's a proper dyed-in-the-wool artist.
100%.
And then you've got a twat and a backwards red cap going, I just did it for the nookie.
But he did just do it for the nookie.
I'm aware. You know what I mean? Right, totally.
That's it.
He then goes... oh, I'm going to be in Tony Hawk Skater. I'm going to be in films. I'm going to start directing.
Yeah, yeah.
And it seems like everything he's ever wanted to have happen has happened for him without a single atom of detectable talent. And at a certain point, you've got to just applaud it.
Yeah. Bro, he does what he loves.
Yeah.
And he does it with such sincerity that everyone is like, you know what? Yeah, you fucking do get to do that because you mean it so sincerely.
It's like every day is his make-a-wish.
Every day he wakes up and goes, I'm just going to kill it. And then he does it. And that is the sort of fucking, that's the sort of attitude that I want to live by.
Yeah,
that is a mint way to live your life.
It's a little bit like he lacks the self-awareness to ever question if what he's doing is anything less than brilliant. And so he kind of just brute forces brilliance.
Yeah.
Because he never once stops and goes, hang about, is this shit? Which is my daily, hourly experience.
Doesn't have that in his brain.
Doesn't have that.
No. And that's fucking incredible.
So when you said he's made a film, do you want to watch it? I recoiled in horror.
Yeah.
And then said, of course I do.
Yeah, of course.
Of course.
Yeah.
I want to see how bad can be.
Okay.
And wildly.
There you go.
But in a fun way.
Right. This is his third film.
Fuck off.
Yeah, this is his third film. This is his return to filmmaking after a decade off.
Oh my God, what happened in those 10 years?
I don't know. So back in 2007, he did The Education of Charlie Banks.
I've not seen
starring
it.
Jesse Eisenberg.
Jesus Christ.
Which is, fuck it, it's genuinely a good film.
No.
It is a good film. I'm not
No
lying.
One that made this can make a good film.
I promise you.
Okay.
It's a good film. Then he did The Long Shots, starring Ice Cube. It's about basketball, what okay. Ice Cube is famous for.
Of course.
It's inspired by a true story. I've just clicked on the poster. And then 10 years later, he did this, The Fanatic.
Why?
Don't know. Why is this film, why was this film made is a great question. And I've got no clue why this was made. I've got no clue at all. This feels like it's the first draft of the script.
Oh, yeah. Right? Oh, very much so.
But Fred Durst had this written for over a decade, and he was rewriting, revisiting, rewriting,
right,
revisiting. This is a work in progress for a decade.
Right.
This is where it ended up.
It feels like, I've had similar projects in my life before,
right,
with clients from my old life,
mm-hmm.
where they would write a mid-range song.
Sure.
And rather than finishing it and then going, that's a mid-range song, hopefully the next one will be better.
Yeah.
They keep tweaking
in
the hopes that it will eventually get tweaked into a world-class song.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's what little Freddy Boy did with this, because there is no way in God's earth that this is 10 years worth of
Well, I mean, he was
writing.
Busy doing Limp Bizkit as well.
Does it take much effort for Fred?
Yeah, I mean, they did a world tour. They did the Loserville tour. They played at a...
Well, and he hasn't got access to a typewriter.
They played a small... A typewriter? Yeah. Not everyone lives above a fucking gravestone.
If you're writing a film,
shop.
You've got to do it on a typewriter.
All right,
fair. No one wants to see a film written on a fucking phone. I want you to sit and smoke cigarettes in the dark.
Why are those your only two options, typewriter or phone? That's an insane way to live your life.
What else is there?
Laptop?
No, doesn't count. It's not
PC.
A real film. No. Typewriter.
Anyway, this film is confusing as fuck.
Yeah, it's nightmarish.
So I'm going to go into this saying straight off the bat, this is probably in my top 10 films of all time.
Okay, I'll be kind.
For all the wrong reasons.
Okay, I'll be kind.
This is the most fun I've had watching a film in a long time.
Yeah,
I cannot wait to watch this again with a big group of people and watch it actively ruin everyone's day. It's going to be fucking amazing. It's just going
to
be...
Turning up to drop bombs, right?
You can't... Fucking sit there and go, you know what, guys? I've got a sincerely great film to bring to the table today. This is a sit down and get ready to laugh your dick off. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, this is it. This is the thing. The confusing parts of this film, I'm going to get into them briefly. Borderline offensive portrayal of someone on the spectrum.
Borderline?
Borderline.
But Ben.
Borderline.
Ben, I can't say what the character that John Travolta had in mind.
Okay.
Highly regarded.
Sure.
By John Travolta, maybe
I've got stuff on this from John Travolta.
But okay,
he loved it.
I feel like in the film Tropic Thunder, Robert Downey Jr.'s character turns to Ben Stiller's character, talking about a film that he did, a bit of Oscar bait called Simple Jack.
Yeah,
and he's like, you never go fully regarded.
Sure,
you've got to hold a little bit back.
Yeah.
John Travolta in this film breaks the needle. That meter goes all the way to the top, bends and snaps.
I mean...
He goes fully regarded.
Sure. I'm going to disagree.
Okay.
Because I think what he does is he takes aspects of things that he might have seen in passing.
Right.
And goes, that is what I imagine this character to be like.
Mm.
Without ever stopping to think, do the people that exhibit these signs and these traits and these behaviors... Mm. Do they all mind if I take all of them and throw them into this character in particular? There was never that consideration.
No.
I don't think he's done it with malice.
I think it's absolutely not done with malice.
It's sheer misguided.
It's absolutely that. It's he's looked at the recipe for salads
and
put every ingredient that can be in a salad on the same plate.
He saw leafy green and started putting fir trees in there.
Literally, there's no limit. Eggs, that goes in the salad.
Yeah.
Potatoes, that goes in the salad.
Anchovies. Well, that's a fish. I ain't got that, but I've got a salmon.
There we go. That'll do.
One whole salmon. Yeah, there's tons of stuff. It's so...
That's exactly John Travolta's performance in this film.
It's heavy-handed as fuck.
Yes.
So, it's a borderline offensive portrayal because I've read some places where people are like, I am on the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
This is hilarious.
Yes.
And then I've read other reviews where people are like, I saw this when it came out and 5 years later I watched it again. In those 5 years, I have been diagnosed as autistic, as of my two children. This film is wildly offensive. And I'm like, but was it when you saw it when it came out? You know what
I mean? Here's my thing. So there's always this, it's recently come up again.
Mm.
The US Office as a series, could it be made today? Because of the things that are said, you know, some of the racial comments.
Right.
But Rainn Wilson came out recently because there was some clickbait headline that came out and said, you know, Rainn Wilson says you couldn't make The Office today. And he's like, that's not what I meant at all.
Yeah.
I said that some of the stuff would be really close to the line, but you have to remember that the people saying, the characters saying this stuff sincerely.
Yeah.
Are meant to be morons.
Yeah, exactly.
It's meant to be the statement of an idiot.
Yeah.
And I feel like, in order to enjoy this film and not find it offensive, you have to recognize that everyone involved is an idiot.
Yeah.
And therefore, it's not offensive. It's the only people that are made to look bad by this film are those that made it.
Yeah, I think...
And not, again, from any malice.
100%. I think that's what it is, though. So from the no malice edge, it's a sort of like...
It's a beautifully misguided...
It's beautifully misguided because you look at it and you go, oh buddy.
Yeah. John Travolta really thought he was cooking.
So did Fred Durst. So did Devon Sauer. So did the producers. Everyone involved was like, you know what, this is mint. Like, you've nailed that, mate.
Yeah.
So the thing that I find most difficult with the John Travolta character is the caricatureness.
Mm.
It's like he's taking it, he's trying to take it over the top. And he's trying to be the kind of wild out there characters that we're used to in this type of movie, in the B-movie era. I don't think this is meant to be a B-movie, but I'm treating it as it is, so I'm going to analyze it that way. Look at Melvin from The Toxic Avenger, right? He's written as way over the top, stereotypical, cartoonish.
Yes.
But you're on his side.
You are.
You're rooting for him every step of the way because there's not a malicious bone in his body.
No.
Everything he does is sheer, like a whoopsie daisy, but it's his persona that's pulling that off.
Yeah.
And he realizes this and he's in on the joke with you. You're in on the joke with Melvin.
Yeah.
You're not laughing at him.
No.
You're laughing with him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a sincere, heartfelt thing. Like, you want to have your arm around your buddy going, oh, mate, good one.
Yeah. Moose is never likeable.
The difference between Moose is I don't feel like I'm ever laughing with him because he doesn't do anything that he finds funny.
No.
Every bit of comedy and every bit of humor comes from the fact that he is a discomfort or he is being bullied or he is having something horrid done to him, and his reaction to that is played as comedy, and I'm like, that is not funny.
That's not funny.
That's just someone stressed out in a situation they're not understanding.
He starts the film righteously indignant about not getting what he wants.
Yeah.
And then it devolves from there. The very first scene, his very first line in this film is, I can't stay long, I've got to take a poop.
Can't talk too long, got a poo.
Yeah.
And then he
tries to haggle with a memorabilia collector about getting stuff he wants that he can't afford and takes it as a moral right for him to have that stuff.
Yeah.
And from there, makes decisions that are objectively selfish.
Yeah.
And then the film goes, oh, but feel sorry for him because he's disabled. And you're like, you can be disabled and an asshole.
Yeah.
And what you put on screen.
This is the whole thing. I'm going to get more into it. It's a different kettle of fish. I'm trying to compare it to B-movie.
Right.
Because I feel like it lives in B-movie territory, but it's a weird type of B-movie, which I will come to later.
Okay.
But it's a strange type of B-movie. Melvin Toxic Avenger, super goofy, super fun. I celebrate his wins. I mourn his losses.
Because he's disabled, but he's not a disabled asshole.
I don't think he's disabled. I just think he views the world differently.
Yeah.
He sees it from a different place than I do.
Yeah.
But I fucking adore him for it.
Yeah.
I adore him regardless of anything. That man, he literally slaps a bully in the face with a mop and I'm like, do it.
Love it.
Go for it. I know that wasn't on purpose, but it might have been.
Yeah.
And I'm with you all the way.
Whereas Moose rides a bike and you're like,
yeah. There's something sinister about it. There's something sinister. Everyone in this film is a terrible person.
Yes.
Every single character. Every character is bad people.
Mm-hmm.
Moose is very obviously in need of guidance or just some fucking help. You know what I mean? Like a good friend to step in and go, buddy, I don't think this is a good idea. And not a single person does this. The store owner that you've mentioned, he just rinses him out of his cash for all the memorabilia. He's like, I've got a vest that's normally $800. And Moose is so desperate for this vest that was worn by his idol in a B-movie from fucking years ago. All right, I'll do it for $300. After Moose has said, I only have $300. And it's like, buddy, that's not your friend.
That's not your friend.
That's a terrible person. Todd, who is like a street performer, along with Moose, who is also for some reason a street performer. That's mentioned twice.
I was so confused.
Yeah.
Because he just dresses up as a British Bobby.
Poppycock.
And starts going, poppycock.
Poppycock.
Poppycock in a mirror. And it's not given any context.
This is fucking amazing, though.
Until like 6 minutes later, where he's on the street doing an act, but no one's watching. So you're like, is this just his hobby?
Can any American listeners, can you just drop us an email and let us know if there has ever been an imitator of a British Bobby from the 60s on Hollywood Boulevard?
The Beatles are here.
The Beatles are here. My mate Dave. My mate Dave.
That you cannot convince me that is not John Travolta doing his best English accent.
There's a moment. There's a moment in that film where he's doing that with a child. He gets his picture taken with a child and he's explaining to the dad and he's like, some people think I'm from London. I'm not really from London. I don't know if you caught this, but in that scene, in the final cut of the film, a woman just walks into frame and starts taking a picture of herself with John Travolta in the background. And I can't confirm it anywhere because I cannot for the life of me research this film anymore.
No one speaks about this film.
No one. But it's so hard to determine whether that's a background actor who was instructed to walk into frame and take a picture as if she's trying to get a picture of like the character actor without paying for it, like a sneaky thing. Or whether that's just a passerby who was walking down Hollywood Boulevard, saw John Travolta filming Gorilla on the street, she just takes a selfie of herself.
I don't think you'd recognise John Travolta as a blue Bobby.
Okay, but let's say that you're a tourist. You go to Los Angeles. You're walking down Hollywood Boulevard. You see someone dressed up like an English Bobby with a full camera lighting in their system, face with a crew around them.
You just take a selfie and go, I'll figure out who this is later.
But then that made it to the final cut of the film, buddy. That made it into the film. It's insane. Yeah. Anyway. Everyone's terrible people.
That whole thing. So the other street performer that he works with, Todd, who is openly a thief. He does a magic act so that his accomplice can go around picking pockets. And later in the film, his accomplice is unavailable and he tries to convince Moose to be his accomplice.
Tries to convince?
Right. Okay.
Threatens to
murder him if he doesn't.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But all I'm thinking is I've hung out with Moose for half an hour.
Right.
And I wouldn't trust him to wipe his own ass.
I don't trust Moose with anything.
No.
I don't like Moose.
Unrelated to his disability.
No,
Jesus Christ himself could come down and cure whatever is going on with Moose with a single touch. And I still would be like, no, mate, I don't want you to make that burger for me.
Yeah.
I'm not going to trust him to do something illegal for me. He will get caught.
He will, but then I think he'd also take the fall.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the angle. Again, Fred's bad too person.
Clever. Fred's too clever for us. That's what it is.
Who the fuck is Fred? Are you on about Todd?
Durst. Fred Durst.
Fred Durst.
The writer of the film.
I keep forgetting that this is Fred. I thought you were on about Todd. All right. Maybe Fred is smart. Maybe Fred is the one that's sort of like pulling all the strings and he wants this to happen. He wants people sitting on a sofa going, what? What? Why?
you don't really know why.
We've got, Todd's a cunt bully to him. We've got Leah, who is his best friend, his BBF, who they keep saying, not BFF, and it drives me insane. I Googled it. It says best brother forever. I don't know whether that's what he meant.
Not real.
No, I don't. I just think they fucked it up. Anyway, she is his best friend. She enables every obsession that he has. And yeah. she makes it actively easier for him to continue down this stalker path
yeah.
without ever intervening once.
Yeah.
She takes him to a celebrity event. She sneaks him into a celebrity event.
He fucks it.
Watches him fucking burn it to the ground
yeah.
and then get kicked out, and she just ignores the whole thing.
Mm.
And then has a go at him for it later. It's like, what are you talking about?
Right.
I'm sorry. Your horror obsessed mate comes up to you and is like, I love all these guys. Mm-hmm. And you go, yeah, I'm a photographer. I'm going to an event where I'm going to shoot them all. And do you want to come along? I'll just sneak you in. It's fine.
And then you fucking ignore it. You end up getting thrown out by security.
Yeah.
And then I show you the app that has every celebrity's home address on it.
Yeah. It's the Star Map app.
Because that's fine.
Yeah. Oh, you're acting a bit like a stalker. But if you really want to find a house, Star Map app. What the fuck are you talking about? That's an awful friend. Awful friend. Hunter is an absolute cock of a celebrity. He is the most rude person. Again and again and again
yeah.
towards a genuine fan who just wants him to sign a fucking vest.
It's one of those hallmarks of bad writing, right?
Yeah.
Where if you ever watch a film and go, right. could this entire film be made redundant
yeah.
by one person taking a breath and having a bit of a chat?
Yeah.
And if the answer is yes, the film would be made redundant.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, I know. So it's the whole thing. But the things in this film, they also escalate in such a way that the stakes disappear. The stakes disappear because he just wants an autograph. It's the yeah. tagline of the movie. He just wanted an autograph. That's yeah. the tagline. Legitimately, sign a fucking vest. That's all it is. I yeah. get you're having an argument with your missus. I get you're a shitty dad. I get you want to go on a run for your kid. I get you don't want him in your neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Don't fucking beat the living shit out of him every time you see him just because he's a bit annoying.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's... Oh, my God.
Whew. Speaking of disappearing stakes...
Right.
Have you mentioned The Gardener?
No, I'm going to get to it.
Okay.
I'm going to get to it. Probably. I might do. This film's insane. There's so much fucking stuff. I'm just going to fucking railroad it because there's too much shit to get through. This film is the most beautiful mess I've ever seen in my entire life, right? Act one being an hour, act two being 7 minutes, and act three is like fucking 15 minutes. Each act is broken up by drawings. This is another thing that I need to get off my chest because I haven't had a chance to talk about it yet. The drawings
right.
that break up the acts.
Right.
They mean, I can't figure out what they mean. I've watched this film three times.
Oh my God.
I don't know
Ben,
what they mean.
Why would you do that to yourself?
But it's genuinely the most fun I've been having recently. It's so good. I don't know what they mean. I'm trying to pick apart this entire thing.
Okay.
I'm going to be like the fucking fanatic. I am the fanatic of the fanatic.
Fred's got you on his string.
I'm on Fred Street, mate. Let me download my fucking Star App map. Yeah. Star Map app? I don't know what it is. Where's Leah? I need a shitty friend to just encourage me to run with it. What are people thinking in this?
No one is. No one's thinking at
Devin
any point.
Devin Sauer. John Travolta. Devin Sauer's big names in horror.
Well, he did Final Destination, right?
Yeah.
Because I recognise the name. As a non-horror guy,
he's done.
I recognise the name because we sometimes go to the convention for the love of horror.
Yeah.
And we're too poor to get too much signed. But I do recognise some of the names.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, that guy comes up. And then I Googled him and I was like, oh, Final Destination. And he has aged surprisingly gracefully considering that film was like 30 years ago.
Yeah, he looks amazing.
Yeah, he looks amazing.
But yeah, so Devin Sauer signed on because of the strength of the script. That's not a joke. That's a no, really.
Come again?
This is him in an interview. He says, I signed on because of the strength of the script and because it's Fred Durst. And that's a mint thing because he's just a fan of Limp Bizkit. And we know this because in the film, he's driving and is like, hey, you ready for some music?
And he plays
How
his
about some Limp Bizkit?
Some Limp Bizkit.
Yeah.
And so in Fred Durst's own film, he writes a scene in which a Hollywood star plays his music and goes, God, this is so good.
Yeah.
This is so good.
Oh, this was great back in the day.
And like, music that you write for yourself is very much like a party. If you have to tell everyone it's good, probably isn't.
I feel like...
Isn't this good? This is good, isn't it?
I feel like him putting his own music in his own film is A, the cheapest possible way to get a soundtrack, and B, if you're going to wank yourself off, do it in private.
Yeah.
You don't need to do it in public. Do you know what I mean?
He did it
only
very,
fans for
he
that.
Did it in, he did it in a film. It's very much in public.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Okay.
So, Devin Sauer also went on to say that he wanted to play the self-absorbed guy who's genre locked and wants to be cast in other types of movies.
Right.
If you look at Devin Sauer's IMDb, I am certain that the irony is not lost on anyone there.
Because that
guy has been genre locked since Final Destination 1.
His first film.
It's amazing. I fucking love him. I think he's genuinely a very talented guy. for what he's great at. And what he's great at is cheap shit horror. And that's where I fucking live. That's where I love it. You know what I mean? Give me more of that. Lean into it. John Travolta is genuinely proud of this film. He fucking loves it.
How?
So, on working with Fred Durst, this is a direct quote from John Travolta. He said, maybe my favorite experience I've had.
That's not real.
It is real. He says, maybe my favorite experience I've had. He's so generous and such an artist, and he allowed me to create a character that no one else would allow. I mean, it's really a wild character, and I felt very free to do that.
Right, so what he's saying is Fred Durst never says no.
Him and Fred Durst worked hard on this. They worked hard on it together. So Fred Durst is the type of guy where he imagines the film in his brain, right? And he's got it all planned out in his head. And if someone brings something to the table that makes that vision better, he's like, let's do it.
Okay.
And if someone brings something to the table that makes that vision worse, he's like, not this time.
Okay.
Which is great for Fred Durst.
For Fred Durst.
And his imaginary film.
Right. What's great for Fred Durst is if you happen to work with a generational talent.
Right.
Like Wes Borland.
Sure.
You can do that and go, yes, I agree with that, Wes Borland. I think that would make a good song.
Mm.
And then do some raps about bums on top.
Yeah.
And get away with it. It feels like without a Wes Borland in the picture, I feel like Fred Durst and someone else directing, brilliant.
Cool.
Because he's just a hype man. I want to see Christopher Nolan and Fred Durst's film.
Yeah, I want to see that too. That'd be sick. But sign me up for that immediately. Right. Immediately.
I feel like John Travolta is not that guy.
I need you to really think about what he's saying here. Fred Durst may be my favorite experience I've had. Just a couple people that John Travolta's worked with.
Right.
Nora Ephron. He was in the movie Michael first. She's the director who did Sleepless in Seattle.
Yeah.
Classic cinema. Lucky Numbers.
Yeah.
He was in that as well. Like classic films, real feel good stuff. Oliver Stone, who did Savages. He also directed Natural Born Killers with Woody Harrelson and Juliette Lewis. So these guys are like top tier stuff. Quentin Tarantino. He's worked with Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah.
And Fred Durst might be his favorite experience he's ever had. Quentin Tarantino looked at John Travolta in the early 90s and was like, that man's tanking. I know what I'll do.
I'll save him.
I'll give him a career back.
Yeah.
And he takes off into the stratosphere. His acting career takes right off and it lands him right on the Fanatic
doorstep. Doing a performance, which is, I mean, John Travolta went all in.
Yeah.
He went all out all the time.
Yeah.
And it's his performance is exactly what I'm saying when we talk about overacting.
Yeah.
I feel like if it was a better plot, and it was a different plot.
If there was an A plot.
If there was a plot and there was a director.
Right.
This performance might, just for its dedication alone, might have found a place. But there's so little light in this film that it just exists in this world where everything is messed up and everybody sucks.
Yeah.
And it ends up just being grimdark all of the time, but too cartoonish to take seriously.
Yeah.
It's like Taxi Driver, but you switch Robert De Niro with Howard the Duck.
Yes, that's exactly.
Now,
right.
I say that out loud, and I already see the value in it.
Yeah, I want to watch it immediately. What are we talking about? You're saying all of this like it's a negative, and all I'm hearing is pitches. You know what I mean? Like, make this fucking George Lucas made fuck all from Howard the Duck. I think if there's one way for him to make money from it, it's that. Yeah.
Instead, we got like John Travolta. I wrote this could have been called Look Who's Stalking.
Yeah, that'd be sick.
Which would be a great title for this. But whilst looking up John Travolta and his career, I have two observations about him.
Sure.
I think every action in this world has an equal and opposite reaction.
Okay.
And I think it's really interesting that John Travolta got resurrected by Tarantino.
Yeah.
His career started to soar again.
Yeah.
Right up until Nicolas Cage's began to recover. And now John Travolta is back down in the pits. And I wonder if they're just two ends of the pendulum facing one another.
I'm starting
in
to
some sort of face off.
Yeah. I'm starting to wonder whether they actually did swap faces back.
This is what I'm thinking.
Or like maybe.
Maybe it's just one actor.
maybe they're two actors, but they've kept the each other's faces, and they're like, "No, I'm not gonna let John Travolta get away with this." Yeah. So he just tanks his career, yeah. Whereas John Travolta is fully committed to the role.
He and really he's has, just, yeah.
He's sending Nick Cage to like The Color Out of Space and Dream Scenario and Pig. That'd be sick. That'd actually be sick.
I've got one more question for you.
Go on.
Which is, John Travolta turned down the lead role in 1984 Splash.
Yeah.
He turned down the lead role in 1995's Apollo 13.
Yeah.
And in 1994's Forrest Gump.
Yes.
So would you rather see John Travolta in Splash, Apollo Forrest 13,
Gump. Forrest Gump?
But then if you go with Forrest Gump, there's a bonus question.
Go on.
How much would you pay to see Tom Hanks playing Moose in this film? As some sort of dark sequel to Forrest Gump?
A lot. I'd pay enough. I'd pay enough to see that, yeah. Yeah, I think I would. That'd be it. Forrest Gump 2. I'm in. You know what I mean?
100%.
Yeah, I'm so in.
I love you, Dunbar.
Yeah, that's what it is. And that'd be mint. Fucking sign me up. Give me a sequel to Forrest Gump or The Fanatic or smash them together.
Yeah.
Fucking job let's, done. Let's have it immediately.
Yes.
Fanatic's based on a true story.
No, it's not.
It is.
No, it's not.
It is. It's a very long and complex story, so I'm going to try and wrap it up as quick as I can. It's inspired by an actual incident involving an overzealous fan,
right,
and Fred Durst. That is all the information I've got.
Okay.
Yeah,
based on a true story in that fans are real,
yeah,
and Fred Durst had one once.
Yeah, just got a bit too much.
Okay.
He turned into a bit of a stalker. Started showing up outside his house and shit.
Is there not something deeply offensive to Limp Bizkit fans about this film?
Kind of. I'll get into why it offended me.
Okay.
But it's also...
So it wasn't John Travolta's performance.
No.
And it wasn't what Fred Durst was saying about his fans with this film. I'm desperate to know what it is.
It's a mix of the two, but it's not what you expect.
I'm desperate to know what it is.
It's a mix of the two, but it's not what you expect. So for his first feature in more than a decade, Fred Durst sought out John Travolta to play Moose. He was like, that's my guy. That's the one.
Right.
But it was the actor's idea to introduce the tics and the eccentricities to help keep him this. I'm going to read this verbatim because okay. I found this online. It was John Travolta's idea to introduce the tics and the eccentricities to help keep him sympathetic and realistically grounded. Travolta said that the role suits his mindset as a character actor. And this is a quote from John Travolta.
Right.
Character acting is an escape from who you think you are. You get a relief from not being you. That's exciting to me. That's why I was able to approach this with confidence. His world is so filled with illusion, delusion, and fantasy that he was fun. I could stay in character longer with him. The innocence in his heart is so pure.
What?
End of quote. I don't think we got the version of Moose that John Travolta gave.
No.
I feel like editing has something to play here, because if this is what's being described, and this is a sincere thing, John Travolta went on a whole press junket of this.
Yeah.
He did interviews everywhere. Do you know who else did? No one. No one. You can find interviews. Mm-hmm. They are in 420p. They're recorded on a phone, and they're before movies. Then they disappear.
Oh my God.
John Travolta, you can find about 150. There is fucking loads of them. Morning TV shows, like
bless his
talk
heart.
Shows. He does, like, he goes to screenings of this shit. He was genuinely super fucking into it. He was out there for the fans. He wanted the fanatics to come up, and he was like, it's not everyone's mantra, but I will take a picture and I'll sign anything. If someone comes up to me in the street, that's just what I do. And then he went out of his fucking way to do all of this for this movie. I love him. I think he's a weirdo, but I fucking love him.
He is a weirdo.
He's a weirdo, but I fucking love him. We've been doing shitloads of B-movies recently, and we've been having loads of fun with it. And B-movies are great for different reasons. This is a weird B-movie. This isn't a straightforward B-movie. This isn't a movie that was made and it was sort of like, cheeky little. This is a film that was made to be a film.
Right.
And ended up in sort of weird B-movie, The Room territory.
Director garage DVD sales.
Yes. Yeah. So my question that I wanted to get answered is, was this a successful film, even for a B-movie?
It can't have cost that much to make.
What do you think the budget was for this?
Oh, God. Okay, let's be generous. 15 mil.
15, it's a little bit more. It's not quite 20. It's a little bit more than 15. It's 18 million. 18 million for this. Now, if you think about it, practical effects are really good.
The practical effects are great.
Cinematography is really good.
Salaries, I was thinking locations. And yeah. I was thinking...
Yeah.
Oh, it's shot really ably.
Yeah, it's shot
like
shot
the
great.
People who have recorded this picture
sure.
have made moving pictures before.
Right.
Like, it doesn't look terrible. It's not like It's not like a Troll 2 from last week where you're like, so this person's never held a camera.
Yeah.
You go, oh, no, this looks right.
Yeah, yeah. But okay. This is what I'm saying, though. So this is like, it's shot well.
Mm-hmm.
It's edited well.
Yeah.
Practical effects, great. Good stuff.
Yeah, lovely.
John Travolta gets kicked down a flight of stairs. That's hilarious. that's enough. If there's one thing that deserves your ticket money, it's that. It's fucking amazing.
It's like seeing Jared Leto in any film where he dies horrifically.
Most
it's
of worth his films.
It. Yeah, yeah. You just go, yeah, do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Good.
John Travolta falling downstairs. Mwah, chef's kiss.
I can never watch Requiem for a Dream ever again. I can watch the ending where his fucking arm's falling off and he's an absolute cretin about to go to jail. Fuck yeah. Watch that all day long. That would be my wank bank, to be honest.
Nice.
Just get it
Jared
off.
Jared Leto.
Lop it off.
Fight Club.
Get him in jail. Fight Club.
Fight Club.
Get him fucked up.
Dallas Buyers Club.
We're on a different kick. This is the thing. So with a budget of $18 million, there's some decent names on the bill. And some decent practical effects, decent editing and all this stuff, you know what I mean? I thought this would have been relatively successful in terms of this is a spectacle of cinema.
Mm-hmm.
You have to go and watch this.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Something plays like this in a local theater, this is going to spread like wildfire from word of mouth.
Yeah.
There's going to be one person in a screen laughing their tits off. The day after, there's going to be five people in the screen.
It's going to just catch fire.
Off.
A bit like Morbius.
Stuff like this. I fucking hate Morbius. But stuff like this. It had a release in 52 theaters across the US. 52 theaters across the US. That was it. It's a very limited release. Ooh. Now, that was in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
It grossed.
No.
Domestic box office.
50.
3.1. I'm joking. $3,153 total.
What? What?
$3,000.
What? That's it made $3,000 at the box office.
Well, let's not undersell it. It was 3,153. And that was across 52 theaters. And that is with the highest gross of all of those theaters. The highest grossing theater was the Arena Cine Lounge in Hollywood that made $736 on it. That gives an average of $60 per theater.
No.
For this film's release.
No, Ben,
that's,
no.
That's like four tickets.
No.
Yeah.
$3,000.
$3,000. It's about four tickets
is that,
per cinema.
That's got to be one of the lowest grossing.
Uber Balls had lower.
But no, budget in to money out.
Uber Balls had a bigger one.
Oh my.
But Uber
Balls
was in a German tax scam.
Yeah, he loves it.
Yeah,
he's doing the Bialystok and Bloom producer scam from the Mel Brooks movie.
He's doing loads of shit, man. He's an odd one. But yeah.
For a sincere, I mean, don't get me wrong, I think that's generous for its artistic value. It shocks me.
See, I think the artistic value outweighs this so fucking much. It's unreal. This has been sort of like, it sounds like a very negative episode. It sounds like a mean episode. We're not this. I'm going to get into why.
Oh, no, we love it.
Yeah, this
like,
film's
this
fucking
is all
incredible.
With love.
Yeah.
Like, you should watch it. Just,
100%.
Just because there is nothing else on this planet that is like this.
No, that's exactly it.
It is an entirely unique film.
Yeah. And this is why this movie is amazing. We're going to get into why it's amazing. What is there any aspects of this film that you really enjoyed? Or is there anything where you looked at and you were like, that is so fucking stupid.
Last week we covered Troll 2.
Right.
And I said, we talked about the German word Schadenfreude.
Yeah.
Finding joy in someone else's misfortune. Yeah. I did not know such highs were possible.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
To see John Travolta so low.
Yeah.
Like... The combination.
You must have come when watching this, because watching
honestly,
Fred Durst crash and burn this hard, you must have been
Don't get me wrong, I did enjoy this film.
Right.
But not because of the film, that makes sense.
Yeah, no.
It is a car crash, and it is, I was constantly just going, I can't believe they just did that.
Mm.
I can't believe that they've built this bit of plot, and now they're just leaving it.
Yeah.
There's a gardener. Who dies.
There is.
And then she's...
No, the gardener doesn't die.
Sorry, not the gardener, the maid. The maid is accidentally killed because there's a bit of a scrap and he bats her away by taking the palm of his hand
and smashing
her nose into her skull.
Yeah.
She falls backwards, hits a little garden ornament, concrete thing, is dead.
Yeah.
And he looks at her for a bit and goes, oh, you've got a nosebleed, and then wanders into the house.
Yeah.
Days pass. She is never again referenced.
So the only time...
She's a speaking role.
Yeah. The only time that she's referenced again is where, at the very end of the film, when Devon Sawa's character, Hunter, is being arrested for the murder of the maid.
Yeah.
The maid was discovered by the gardener that had ignored her for 2 days.
For 2 days.
Because the gardener is actively working on his garden, because we see that in the film.
Yes.
So which means when he goes home early, the one day where he's like, it's raining, I need to go home now. It's not raining, it just sounds like it's raining. I need to go home now. And he's like, yeah, go.
Yeah.
The day after, when he comes back to work,
he just mows around her.
Just, there is no mention of it whatsoever. The day after, when it's all found out, he's like, the gardener's at the door, tipping the police off, being like, that's him. That's the one that killed her. Now, my problem with this is if at any point Devon Sawa's character went, there has been a stalker hanging around this house, and he has been in here because his DNA is everywhere.
Yeah.
He has stabbed me.
He's used my toothbrush.
He's used my son's toothbrush.
Yeah.
He stabbed me in the chest. I've just been tied to my bed.
I've got ligature marks on my fucking wrists.
There's a fucking, everything is, all the evidence is there. Rather than just getting in the back of police department and putting his head down, I think the cops would have been like, oh, so it wasn't you. It was obviously the man that had just had his fucking eyeball removed and walked down the street because 11 police cars were driving up the road as a one-eyed bleeding man was walking down the road. Sound. This is what makes this film great. That entire setup right there, mental.
Incredible.
Where else are you going to get that kind of nonsense? It just doesn't exist.
Whilst John Travolta Simple Jacks his way through the film.
This is what I'm saying.
Every single gritty, awful thing that happens is then followed by like somebody doing a bad impression of Pluto from Disney's Pluto.
John Travolta does this thing where he grabs the lobe of his ear and then sniffs his fingers, but then he starts doing it to other people and it's always at the most inopportune moments. And it's like, that's a choice that was made and left in.
Yeah.
Someone saw that. I'm not going to say someone. Fred Durst saw that and was like, do it again at this point.
Clapped.
Do it again at this point. It was fucking, that's all it is. Now look, this is shit in the best possible way. This is Fred Durst's Troll 2. This is Fred Durst's The Room. This is his samurai cop, right? Yes. All these fucking things. The resolution of this movie is fucking stupid. Give me an autograph. No. End of film.
Yeah.
Give me an autograph, all right? End of film.
Yeah.
But no. We delve into this fucking nightmare realm.
Every single incident in the plot is a 1 in a million outcome.
Yes.
On the back of a 1 in a million outcome.
Yes.
It's always the least likely, stupidest thing that could possibly happen is what happens, so there is more film.
Do you want to know what my favourite thing about this entire film is?
Right.
Leah narrating the whole film. It is in... She's at best a C-tier character.
She's
one of the side characters. She's barely in this film.
Yes.
And for some reason, she narrates everything.
Yeah.
It's not from her point of view.
No.
She is unaware of everything that's going on outside of her field of vision.
Yeah.
Why does she know anything that's going on? Why is she the creative choice to be narrating this film?
I've got a full theory on this, which explains it.
Here.
Everybody speaks about this film during the making of.
Right.
Like it's a magnum opus.
Right.
Like Fred Durst is a fucking genius. Mm. He worked on the script for 10 years.
Right.
John Travolta, he goes all in. He goes all out.
Yeah.
And everybody's happy.
Mm-hmm.
And then weirdly, we've got this kind of really short runtime where things don't make sense and narration gluing things together.
Right.
And it made me realize Devon Sawa's character, an asshole.
Right.
John Travolta's character, an asshole.
Yeah.
If there was about an extra 35 minutes in this film.
Right.
And you split it equally between them.
Right.
And made them nice.
Sure.
So both of them are complex, deep characters with good sides and bad sides.
Yeah, yeah.
And then this happens.
Yeah.
Not that bad a film.
No, great
film. Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance by Park Chan-wook.
Yeah, yeah.
Both of them, antagonist and protagonist.
Yeah, yeah.
But that film's 3 hours long.
It is.
If you took an hour and a half out of Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance,
yeah,
and then tried to glue it back together with some narration, I think you'd end up with The Fanatic.
I don't think you would. I don't think Park Chan-wook's capable of this.
He's not. Of course, this is too big. I'm trying.
This is too good for Park Chan-wook because what Park Chan-wook would do is he would have the motivation of the characters and the development still in there, which is ruining it.
Yeah.
You don't want to distract people with plot and development. What you want is nonsense all the time, very fast. Yeah. No resolution, no reason for it, no rhyme or reason for anything. Just stuff happens. It's hilarious. Also, he's a bobby. Poppycock! Literally, me doing that is about as frequent. We've spoken about him being a British policeman as much as he is a British policeman in the movie.
Yeah, in the film.
And I'm telling you, it comes up that randomly. It's fucking amazing.
I know for a fact that Fred Durst thought that blue bobby poppycock scene was his Joker dancing in the public bathroom.
Yeah. And it was. We do live in a society. So, what's it really mean? You know what I mean? What's all this boiled down to? What's this film really mean? I'm going to take this as a stark warning. I think this film is a stark warning, and I think it's one that is dangerously close to home.
Right.
John Travolta is playing a glasses-wearing, mullet-toting, autistic movie memorabilia collector with a penchant for patterned shirts and a shitty horror movies.
This didn't escape me, Ben. I was too kind to bring it up, and you've brought up yourself.
This is Fred Durst knowing his fan base and putting a British accent on it to real fucking sell it home.
Yeah.
And now I get it, right?
Have you met him?
Not yet.
He's met you, apparently.
Yeah, he knows me. He sees me, and this is it. I feel like I've never watched a film and been sort of like, I feel so seen. I get it now. I get it. Some people watch, you know, these movies and they're like, God damn, it's so nice to finally be represented. Same. Yeah. The mullet wearing. Shitty horror movie obsessed.
Yeah.
Movie memorabilia collectors that are just milling about town, being fucking weird. I've always wanted a moped.
This is what would happen if you met Barbara Crampton and she wasn't nice to you.
It'd be awful.
Yeah.
It'd be awful. I'd write her a letter. I don't think I'd kill her cleaner, but, you know, I'd write her a letter.
Yeah. So it's just Fred Durst seeing you.
I just think this is nonsense. I think it's silly. I think this is something that happened to Fred Durst at some point and he was like, I can drag that out.
I disagree. I think it's more sincere than that. And I do. It comes back to what I was saying earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I think Fred Durst has always been the lead singer of a band in which he is not the lead talent. And he has been able to just vibes and go, what I bring to this, because there is no way Limp Bizkit would be anywhere near as popular as they are without him.
No.
He's the dancing monkey clown at the front of the stage, that is so willfully stupid that everyone can relate. Because the guitarist who I adore is dressed like a geisha with all black contacts in, wearing a dress.
Yeah.
And that's not relatable. And that's why I love Wes Borland.
Right.
But that's not why people love Limp Bizkit.
No.
They love Limp Bizkit because they just get down in the mud of Moron and go, it's fun though, isn't it?
You are sounding dangerously like a juggalo right now. I'm just saying.
Right. I feel like this is maybe Fred Durst just going, I'll just rock up, I'll just vibes it, because that's always worked in the past.
Yeah.
And everybody involved has tried to step in and help him and provide those vibes. And sometimes you just miss. But there is nothing more beautiful than watching someone swing as hard as they can and miss.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it still counts as entertainment, and this is still an incredibly entertaining film. Not for the reasons that Fred Durst wanted it to be. This isn't Taxi Driver.
I don't know that that's true.
But it is Simple Jack.
I don't know that that's true. This is the thing. I've been trying to decide whether this is true or not, and I've tried looking into it as much as humanly possible. I know he's proud of this, and I know it's like a good film for him.
Right.
And I know he worked hard on this script. I don't know whether this is a sincere attempt at a horror slasher or whether this is
a deliberate trying to be like a bad B movie.
Like a parody type movie based on an interaction that he had in the past, blown out of all proportion.
I hadn't even considered that this was a parody.
I can't find anything either way. And people that say it's one way or another, No one ever gets confirmation.
He's got vibes.
No one ever gets a ride. It's literally like, I don't know whether he's like an idiot savant or an evil genius. Either way, the outcome is the same, where I don't think he's stepping up the plate to swing as hard as he can. Yeah. I think he's moonwalking to the plate
right.
and then just sort of juggling the bat and the ball hits it at some point.
Right.
This is okay. This is what he does. And he's doing it with such fucking charisma that everyone's on their feet. No one gives a shit whether he's out or whether he hits a home run.
Right.
It's like he's just fucking moonwalked to the plate. Yeah. What an absolute gazer.
Fair.
I think Fair. The moral of the story is, I think what this really means is, fuck trying to do everything so seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Just have some fun with it.
But
have some fucking fun with it.
Yep.
If it works, it works. If it don't, it don't. Did you enjoy it? Mint. That's all that fucking matters. Because no one's going to sit and tell John Travolta that he's wrong for this. Because everyone tried and he still fucking did a press junket on his own.
Yeah. And I don't blame Fred Durst and I don't blame John Travolta.
No.
Do you know who gets the blame?
Who?
I think you get the blame. And I think I get the blame.
I like that.
Because we enabled these men.
Yeah. I like that.
We watched it. We talked about it.
The worst thing is you've done that and all I've got is the little guitar lick that's playing under those lyrics. Yeah.
Before we started.
But do you think we can fly?
I've hidden so many Limp
Bizkit.
Yeah,
I know, yeah. Dude, it's been throwing me all fucking episodes.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
I thought you'd be like, hey, but you know, you just deadpan looked me in my eye and just let them continue.
No, I'm more proud than anything else because I thought it was leading to like part of the film and then I'm just sort of like sick. Now I've just got songs to come ahead. Thank you for the earworm. Also, John Travolta was a horrible person at this.
Do you want to play a very quick game?
Yeah. Hit me with it.
Right. So, it's a very simple game.
Mm-hmm.
Who said it? John Travolta or Fred Durst?
Okay.
Kids are like lightning. You grab that lightning when you can get it.
What?
Kids are like lightning. You grab that lightning when you can get it.
John Travolta.
Correct.
Yeah, shockingly.
1 point.
That's a weird thing to say.
isn't it? Emotionally, I was affected a lot by Rage Against the Machine. Not specifically the literal intention of the words.
Yeah.
Likes Rage Against the Machine, mm-hmm. doesn't bond with the lyrics.
Yeah. I've heard this before. Okay. Like, I thought it was hilarious because the first time that I heard Rage Against the Machine, I just didn't listen to the lyrics, but the music was sick.
Okay.
Yeah.
For me, I was like, yeah, protest music and the music's sick.
Yeah.
Fine. I don't believe in regrets. I believe your future is in your tomorrow.
John Travolta.
Yeah? John Travolta. Yeah. Okay. These are just shit quotes. I've always been Fred Durst and I've always been me.
John Travolta.
Correct.
Yeah.
The future is easy because it doesn't exist, but the past is painful because it lives forever.
Fred Durst. Yeah.
Both men at different times in their life said the same fucking thing.
Sick.
Don't worry about the future because it's not real.
There you go.
And this is why I think together they bonded. All they needed...
I love
a decent
this.
Script
yeah.
and a decent director.
And they got it.
And a plot.
I know. And they got it. This is what I'm saying. And then they just made magic. There you go. This film's a nightmare fuel. This film is nonsense. This film means nothing.
But it's wonderful.
Goes nowhere. The pacing is insane. The structure is insane. The fucking fact that he's promoing Limp Bizkit just casually in the middle of his film is insane.
Yeah.
I loved every second of it.
I'm glad.
This is unironically, right now, probably creeping into top 10.
Good.
Just purely because it's fucking stupid. And I cannot wait to show this to all my mates. I cannot wait to sit in a room full of my mates and just cry laugh over how much it's ruined their days. Go and watch it. I'm going to give this like a fucking... As a film, mm-hmm. 3 out of 10.
Yep.
As a piece of cinematic history that genuinely leaves you scratching your head and wiping your eyes from cry laughing, fucking fat 10. This is a spectacle. This isn't just cinema. This isn't just a film. This is an experience.
Right.
And it is a game changer for all the wrong reasons. Okay. It's fucking mint. What are you rating it?
As a film?
Yeah.
0.
Fair.
As a piece of cinematic history, 2.
Sure.
As a really fun way to ruin someone else's day,
right.
10.
There you go. That's what I was waiting for.
Recommend this to someone you hate.
But also recommend it to someone you love winding up.
Yeah, it's that.
It's that. Fred Durst's movie 43.
It really
recommend
is.
Recommend that to your mates, and then you're literally sitting there. You're strapped in for the ride, and it's a fucking bumpy one. But watching people see that for the first time, honestly,
Beautiful thing.
Just gets my tits hard. You know what I mean?
Rock solid tits.
Can't explain it.
Just before we all give you... Oh, wait, no. We've just done that.
Mm.
So now you've heard our final, definitive, controversial, all-time rating of this cinematic classic. Just got a very quick comment corner this week.
Hit me with it.
Well, let me just check the little WhatsApp group where we send them to one another. Oh, yes, of course. I wanted to... find something out. I wanted to find out if one of our most valued Instagram commenters, who, unlike many of our listeners...
Is this the dude that always says first?
Yeah.
Love this fella.
Jameson Craig.
That's his name.
Legend.
Yeah.
Does wonders for our engagement.
Does.
Dr. Deadlight Cosplay also shares to stories. Quad Pro Quo also shared to stories.
Sharing. Love Dr. Deadlight.
Yeah, amazing.
I fucking love that guy.
Sharing to your story, even if you got 2 followers, it counts for like 15 likes. It's really good. But Jameson Craig always comments first.
He does.
And I want to know, Jameson, are you listening?
Ooh.
Because I reckon you might just be an Instagram guy.
That's a question.
I reckon if you're listening, by the time this comes out, one of the reels for this movie, rather than commenting first,
right,
you might comment last.
I'll tell you what. If you're a true fan... Some would say a fanatic. Rob will sign one of his vests for you. If you queue up in line at a comic book store to get your vest signed, Rob might have an argument with his ex-wife.
Yeah.
And then have a go at you.
Yeah.
And then one of your mates might recommend that you download the Star Map app.
And then you can come to my house and just kill my cleaner.
Hang outside Rob's house, kill his cleaner. Don't tell his gardener will find her in a couple of days. And then get your eye stabbed out. But don't worry, you will get kicked down the stairs as well. But then also, you get to dress up like Jason Voorhees.
Yeah.
And pretend to stab.
Give me a bit of time to get married and have a divorce so I've got an ex-wife. And then we'll kick
this
whole thing off.
Don't worry about all this.
Yeah.
You've got time, is what I'm saying.
That's it. That's the end of the show.
That is it.
We love you all dearly. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. And thank you for the support. It means the fucking world.
It genuinely does. Now go tell your fucking mates. Go tell your mates. Get him in here. Get him in here. Pass us around. You know what
You've
I mean?
Got a friend that you haven't told about this podcast that you can 100%. Bully into listening to it.
And I get it. I get why you haven't told your mates about it, because you don't want to be sort of like, yeah, listen, I've got something for you. And then you pass it over and it turns out to be this. Mm. Because this is what we do with our mates and films.
Yeah.
We go, oh, I found a film. It's amazing. It's The Fanatic. Everyone sit down and pay attention. Just kidding. It's ruined your day. I get it. I do.
But...
Thank you
for hanging out with us, especially at the start of the week. We know a lot of you listen on a Monday. We see the numbers. Ben is going to consider the film, Fred Durst, The Fanatic, and he's going to boil down its essential themes and messages.
I got this one, mate.
Into a Monday motivational pep talk to help you get you through your week. It's the only part of the show that matters, because it's the only part of the show that helps you. While I just say... Consume.
Fred Durst woke up one day and was like, this is what I'm going to do. And then he committed to it for at least 6 months. Maybe a year. I don't think it was a year. It can't have been that long. He committed at least 6 weeks of Fred Durst's life went into this film. If Fred Durst can wake up and go, The Fanatic is where it's at and where I'm going to leave. It's my magnum opus. You can get out of bed and do your fucking teeth and go do so much. You know what I mean? You could literally do anything. If Fred Durst could pull this out of the bag, mate, buy the hot air balloon. You know what I mean? Jump on that train to Disneyland Paris on a fucking Tuesday morning. Who cares?